Good morning. I'm Joanne Rideout. It's time for the Ship Report, the show about all things maritime. It is Friday, August 30th, 2019. We have 11 vessels on today's Columbia River ship schedule. In our marine weather forecast, we have south winds 10 to 15 knots, wind waves from the south 3 feet high at 5 seconds apart, and west swells 3 feet at 9 seconds apart. Chance of showers is in the forecast. So we have those local wind waves from local conditions causing south swells, wind waves from the south, and then we have west swells coming in from further out to sea. So it's just always interesting to note these two very different forces acting on our local waters. The wind waves are always going in the same direction as the prevailing wind that day. So we got a south wind, we're going to have south wind waves. But the westerly swells are almost always coming from way further out to sea, from weather systems that are way away from us. So a storm in Japan can send pour energy into the ocean, rile things up there. It will travel all the way across the ocean to here, and we will see it as those swells. So when you have waves coming from one direction and at a 45-degree angle, you have swells, you could have a little bit of something that's such a great term, confused seas, almost like a little bit of a sloshy effect like you might get in a bathtub if you sloshed your hands around. So it's a matter of forces acting on the water, and we see that. So I guess the marine weather forecast is sort of describing in sort of graphic terms for us what we're going to see, the results of those forces acting on from weather and other things acting on the ocean. So just always interesting to look at that. It's just amazing how much is going on out there. And we are seeing the weather shift now that we're a couple of days away from September 1st. That means meteorological fall will be here. And we've seen the weather here shift. And there have been a few of those crisp, sunny days where you just go outside and you just feel that fall is in the air. And so a little bit about what's happening. The water is cooling down a bit out in the ocean at the data buoy off the mouth of the Columbia River. There's something called the National Data Buoy Center that has buoys in coastal waters all over the United States. And if you want to find out more about them, you can just Google NDBC. But there are buoys off of the mouth of the Columbia River that gather data, and they have wind sensing apparatus on board. They test the temperature of the water there. 60 degrees right now in the ocean off the mouth of the Columbia. And the days are getting shorter. Tomorrow will be 3 minutes and 7 seconds shorter than today. And we see that. So the days are becoming shorter. You've probably noticed that, but by a defined amount, a few minutes every day. And the amount that changes from day to day, so it isn't always the same. It sort of seems to speed up through parts of the moon's and the Earth and the moon's interaction. But you will see the days getting shorter now because that's just the time of year. Let's take a look at our Columbia River ship schedule, and then we're going to talk about that magnitude 6.3 earthquake that happened earlier this week on the 29th. A little bit about what to worry about and what not to worry about from that. I have some information from meteorologist Gordon McCraw and seaside geologist Tom Horning, a couple of my favorite experts about these sorts of things. And I asked them both to weigh in on this because they are the folks who can give us that level-headed information that we need and let us know what we should worry about and what we shouldn't worry about. So I love that sort of thing. Okay, ship schedule. One inbounder today so far, and she's not coming in until, well, she's going to cross the Columbia River Bar about 11 o'clock tonight inbound, the Belle Plaine, arriving from China, headed for our Astoria anchorage here. She's ultimately going to the port of Portland to pick up potash. But she probably won't reach Astoria's anchorage until about early on Saturday morning, 12:30. It takes about an hour and a half to get from the bar to crossing the bar at the mouth of the river there by Cape Disappointment. And the south, coming through the mouth of the jetties, takes about an hour and a half. Now, that can change. I've just heard horror stories talking to Columbia River bar pilots in the past about bad weather on an ebb current where the river is just pushing against the ship and the weather is terrible and the wind. One pilot told me that one time, and this probably may happen more often than that maybe this is not that isolated a thing, where it took about 6 hours to get from the mouth of the river to here because the weather was just so awful. That's probably an extreme situation, but what I'm trying to sort of get you to think about is that there are always forces, powerful forces, acting here on the river. And if they're pushing against you and your boat and your craft, you're going to have a harder time getting from one place to another. They can include wind, and they can include tides and waves and So there's a lot to consider when you go out there on our river. In our Astoria anchorage, we have the Tokyo Spirit headed for Kalama late tonight, about 11 p.m. She's going up to Kalama to pick up corn, soy, or wheat, and she'll probably be in Kalama by about 5 a.m. on Saturday morning. That leaves the some ships in the Astoria anchorage, the Bulk Polaris, the Daria Moti, the Azure, the Lamesis Wind, and the Sea Hope. All those ships are sitting high in the water. You can see their bottom paint showing because they don't have any cargo and they're kind of bobbing a little bit higher than usual. When they come downriver, as I've said, they will be hunkered down in the water, weighed down by their cargo, safely weighed down by their cargo, and actually going out into what is becoming increasingly stormy, wavy weather out there as we head down into the fall. Having a fully loaded ship is a good thing because it just adds stability. And our outbounders, the Teal Arrow, is leaving Portland carrying soda ash from the Port of Portland, leaving around midnight. She probably passed Astoria outbound around 6:30 a.m. today. The Global Saikai heading out of Longview at 3 p.m. today. Probably passed Astoria outbound with logs on board at about 9:30 this evening. And the Leiden or Lyden is leaving Portland. Hyundai's on board, car carrier, leaving around 6 p.m. Might see her running lights going by around midnight. And the American Bulker is heading out of Vancouver around 6:30 p.m. That would put her past Astoria a little bit after midnight. Well, that earthquake, let's talk about that. Scary to see. I saw it on Facebook. Maybe you did too. A magnitude 6.3 earthquake 200 miles offshore west of Bandon, Oregon, happened on the 29th at about 8:07 a.m. So immediately we think, oh my God, you know, it's not the big one, but is it a precursor of the big one? A lot of things run through our minds because we've been so much has been talked about that big earthquake on the Cascadia subduction zone. Well, it turns out that, of course, as you know, there are earthquakes and then there are earthquakes. And as it turns out, the offshore, there are faults, like the Cascadia subduction zone, and there are faults, meaning interruptions in the Earth's crust there. Now, there's something down in that area called the Blanco Transform Fault, and it is a strike slip or vertical fracture slip. And this is from meteorologist Gordon McCraw. So strike slip and vertical fracture slipping mean that stuff is just moving around down there, sort of like one analogy that I think of is sort of the Earth adjusting her petticoats. It's not the crust flipping up kind of motion that happens that creates tsunamis, where a big part of the Earth's crust uplifts and moves a whole big column of water around, and that's what can create a tsunami issue. So this Blanco Transform Fault tends to move in ways that don't tend to cause tsunamis. It's not part of the Cascadia Subduction Zone Fault. Earthquakes like this happen there frequently, and there are many quakes that happen there. So in general, Gordon McCraw says, you need a subduction zone quake greater than 7.0 magnitude to create a tsunami. So that's not what we had here. Geologist Tom Horning from Seaside, I asked him to weigh in as well. He posted a map on Facebook that showed clusters of earthquakes that tend to happen in that area, which is down near the Oregon-California border, and up near off of Vancouver Island in the British Columbia area and in Washington. So just areas where there's a lot of seismicity, as they call it, happening, a lot of movement happening that does not necessarily mean anything terrible is happening. What Tom says is that even though these particular earthquakes do not portend a near-term rupture of the subduction zone, the big one, they are gentle reminders to be prepared. So every once in a while, this Blanco fracture zone has an earthquake, and it tends to relieve a bit of stress in that area, so that can be a good thing. So the pressure of the parts of the plates of the Earth pushing against one another can be kind of dissipated a little bit when one of these kinds of earthquakes happen. But Tom reminds us that we should always be prepared for the big one. If you don't have a go bag, get one. Gosh, you can buy them at Costco these days. It's a really easy thing to do. So the point is, be prepared, not scared. That you may have heard that saying. And so this one was not the big one, not even close. And the Ship Report will be on vacation Monday for the Labor Day holiday, so I will see you on the air on Tuesday. You've been listening to the Ship Report, the show about all things maritime. I'm Joanne Rideout. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful weekend.